You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, it's a beautiful fall evening in Texas and a gorgeous sunset out there, and I thought we could have another one of our amazing coffee conversations.
Well, there sure is a lot to talk about right now. It's been kind of a really busy news cycle of late, and sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't, but it seems to be that because we're going into an election time, I think we're going to have months and months of a busy news cycle. So the big news today
is that Abu al-Baghdadi is dead. So the foremost ISIS terrorist is now no more. Okay, blew himself up with a suicide vest, but unfortunately used three of his small children as shields, and they all went up in flames with him. But yes, he's been positively identified through DNA. Our special forces located him in northern Syria. And with the cooperation of other countries, we're able to go in and get him. They literally killed everybody that was protecting him. And apparently he had some sort of an escape route down a tunnel, but it was only a dead-end tunnel. And they literally sent the dogs after him, and he panicked and blew himself up. But none of our people were injured. I think a dog got hurt.
The dog that went in the tunnel after him got hurt. First of all, I'm really happy that that's the case, because he was a monster. And the way that he murdered people, from the young girl to the man that they put in the cage and burned, which I'll never forget, all of the people that he's responsible for murdering. And I'm really glad to see him gone.
Well, brought to justice is the term that I like to use, and I know President Trump uses that term as well. The guy was a monster. He was personally responsible for ordering the execution of hundreds, if not thousands, in the most brutal ways. He was a serial rapist. He was a horrible individual. But the Washington Post wrote an obit and referred to this monster as an austere religious scholar with no aptitude for fighting or killing. Where the heck do these people come from that write such glowing sentiments about one of the world's most notorious, brutal killers?
I'm stunned that you even said that. I would like to know what reporter wrote that article, and I'm going to look it up. And next time we talk, we're going to talk about it, because that's ridiculous. And this guy, like you said, I mean, there's no other word in my mind except for monster for him. And, you know, the thing about this whole operation that President Trump handled really well, Ron, was keeping it quiet. Not telling the Democrats, which they're all in a tizzy over, but I'm glad he didn't, because he's absolutely right. That White House leaks like a sieve, and it would never have been a quiet operation. Somebody
correct.
Would have been warned, and he would have been out of there.
No, correct. Yeah. I would have done exactly the same thing. When you can't even trust the people in your own administration with secret information, then you've got to handle it exactly the way the president did.
Well, and look at this idiot whistleblower who's out there who, you know, he was in on a private conversation between a world leader and the president, and he just has to go say something. So, yes, he did the right thing. One person that needed to be eliminated is eliminated. And, you know, we can move on from there.
No, I think, and that's a huge story, but I can't help but think that another story is what we just talked about with the Washington Post,
absolutely.
I just mentioned. How can we go in 19 years from a country that was attacked by terrorists and lost thousands of our people, thousands, and go from that to the new leader, the former leader of the replacement for Al-Qaeda, and refer to him as an austere religious scholar. I mean, I don't know where these Americans are coming from, and they should be embarrassed to even refer to themselves as American. This, to me, is seditious, and it's traitorous.
It is traitorous, and this person needs to sit down and watch the videos of the televised deaths of the Americans and the non-Americans that this man ordered the deaths of. They were horrific. They were, I can't even imagine the horror that those people went through.
Do you remember the Coptic Christians that ISIS
yes.
walked down to
yes.
the beach?
And
they would take
now.
Like
yes.
20 of them at a time.
Yes.
And they would slit their throats on the beach. Do you remember that? And the guy that orchestrated that was al-Baghdadi. And the guy that carried it out was killed just a couple of years ago. So little by little, we're tracking all of these vile people down, and we're bringing them to justice. And if it's them being killed or us killing them, that's fine. Or them kill themselves, I could care less. But this is where America has gone. We keep talking about it. If we're ever going to be destroyed, we're going to be destroyed from within.
Well, and like people like this particular writer, like that, where you have something to say that's just so completely false. So, I'm glad that this is over with. It's going to be another chapter. There's going to be somebody to come and replace him, and then we're going to keep up this going forward. But one of the other comments that was made, Ron, by, I think his name is Tapper, on CNN, What does he have to say? But, well, I think that President Trump's action is going to bring even more people to join ISIS. I mean, you just cannot find anything good that this man does, can you?
No, you just can't. Hey, listen, I wanted to talk about the Democratic members of the House impeachment inquiry and how they're violating the House rules in refusing to allow the non-House intelligence members, you know, because they have the House Intelligence mm-hmm. Committee is currently conducting the inquiry into the so-called impeachment of President Trump, right? And they're bringing people in for testimony, and they're deposing these people. And there's transcripts written about all of this. And those transcripts, by the House rules manual, and in the section for this is found on page 549, and anybody can Google it and bring it up. You can bring up any of the manuals and, you know, that they use, the rules, the regulations for Congress, and you can read it for yourself on page 549. And it quotes that, and it specifically states that such records shall be the property of the House and all its members. And so, people like, our representative, Daniel, Crenshaw, mm-hmm. the Navy SEAL, he goes down just the other day to the Democrats' office and tries to get a copy of the transcripts, and he brought his rule book with him, and he says, hey, we are allowed to read these transcripts, and they refuse to give him the transcripts. Well, I mean, it's just amazing. This is a closed-door hearing. This is super-secret stuff, and it is the witch hunt. And it is the lynching, or the attempted lynching, of President Trump and holding a bloodless coup.
Yes, and it's a fishing and hunting expedition. And what they're doing is they're here's what they say. They say, okay, well, we're just getting all of our information, and then when we get it all put together, you'll be allowed to see it, and you'll be allowed to question those people that are, you know, that they deem important, right? So here's what they're doing. They're picking and choosing who might have the story that they want, and then those are the people that they're gonna, you know, end up having as their witnesses. To my mind, they're going to discount anybody who says, no, President Trump did nothing wrong. So they only want the people who have something to say. And most of those people, by the way, are people who have a bone to pick with the president over, I don't know, who knows what, a firing, a tweet, a disagreement, whatever. That they're one of the guys is a never Trumper. This Taylor guy is a never Trumper. So, you know, what do you expect? This is totally ludicrous. This whole thing is ludicrous. And you know, in my mind, it's not going to go anywhere.
You know, just recently, I had a really great radio show with Dr. Joni Johnston, our forensic psychologist, and she's my co-host on A Thread of Evidence. And we were talking about implicit and confirmation bias and how dangerous it is for prosecutors, investigators, and juries to practice implicit bias or confirmation bias. And what you mentioned is exactly what these Democrats are doing with regards to the president. They've got confirmed in their mind that he's guilty. And so what they're doing is they're discounting any bit of exculpatory or, you know, innocent evidence, and they're focusing only, they're picking and choosing, just exactly what they want, and keep trying to shove a square peg into a round hole to get this president impeached. It's absolutely disgraceful.
You know, I don't even believe that they believe that he's guilty. I don't believe that.
Because, it's theater.
Yeah.
It's political
theater.
You're right.
Theater. It is that. Because if they really, really thought that he was really guilty, they wouldn't be having to go on this hunting and fishing expedition.
They would just simply vote to impeach.
They would have the evidence, and they don't have the evidence. So here's the question. So this is going to end up one of two ways, right? The Congress is going to vote to impeach him because they get some horrible amount of evidence of his guilt, or they're going to have to say, well, we don't have it, and we're not going to impeach. Which is it going to be?
Well,
because I don't think that they can afford to lose face and say, we're not going to do it. They have put themselves in a box right now where they have to find something, or they're going to look like a bunch of fools, like the fools that they are.
Well, and by the way, tick, tick, tick. Well, you know, we're not all that far away from the election, you know, and it's tick, tick, tick. And every single day that they stretch this out and they find absolutely nothing is another day when President Trump can say, you got nothing.
Right. Well, there's only going to go one of two ways. And like I said, they've put themselves in a box, and now they've got to do something one way or the other. They either have to go forward with a nothing weak case, or they have to say that we have nothing. And that's going to be, either way is bad, because the Senate's going to shut them down anyway.
That's exactly right. Well, you know, I hear with regards to the inquiry that one of the next key witnesses that they're going to bring forward is John Bolton, the former ambassador and then the national security advisor.
Well, they want him to testify. I don't know that he's agreed yet or what that situation is, but yes. And they're getting everybody around John Bolton to testify. So, it's a hunting and fishing expedition. And then we have on the other side where we have an investigation into the FISA warrant, and we have our Attorney General
Bill Barr
looking into all of these things. Apparently that has come now into a criminal investigation.
Well, you know, turnabout's fair play, Linda, and we've got the makings of a criminal investigation that's going to take place with Prosecutor Durham, right?
Well, he and Horowitz. So Horowitz has not released his report yet, but we're waiting every day for the report, and apparently whatever they have seen from that report has now sparked a full-fledged criminal investigation. So Durham is looking into some charges on some people, and we're not exactly sure, but he definitely wants to talk to...
Well, you want to talk to Comey. He's going to want to talk to McCabe, Clapper.
Right.
He's going to want to talk to who else?
Well, Clapper, I think it's Clapper and the other CIA guy. Yeah.
Oh, Brennan.
Brennan, yeah. Right. I think that those are the guys. And, you know, here's my little, I know nothing about this, but here's my little idea. At the time, because they went to Italy to talk to people in Italy, and they spoke to the gentleman that gave the money to one of the players in this that was a Republican, and they gave him the money, or they tried to give him $10,000. Well, I guess that they did. Well, what he did is he took that money and he gave it to his lawyer and had him lock it away in a safe.
Correct.
Because he felt that he was being set up and that it was a marked money.
Correct.
So he went back to Italy to get that money. Well, the person that handed him that money is who the investigators met with. And it seems to me that there must have been some good conversation about who told him to do that, that started this criminal investigation. So they were really trying to get people, I mean, this whole thing was a setup. Listen, you take something and you invent this whole treason and Russian
collusion
and conspiracy, and you invent it, and it's paid for by Hillary Clinton's campaign. Tell me that something is not seriously wrong here.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't want to be the soothsayer, but what I think is going to happen is eventually this is going to go a couple of different ways. Number one, they're going to have enough to bring to grand jury to indict. That's number one. Number two, it's going to be spitting over the line, and I'm not, having worked with feds before, I'm just really not confident in their abilities to properly investigate. Now, I know there's a big mystique about federal investigators, but I'm sorry, I haven't seen some really good, intelligent investigative.
But you're
work
not talking
done.
About John Durham, are you? Because I think he's a good investigator.
Wait a minute. No. He's not an investigator. He's a prosecutor. He's got to rely on investigators. But the thing that bothers me, and I'll be a little bit pessimistic about that, but only based on history, and that is nobody's going to get into trouble for this. Nobody's going to jail over this. Nobody's going to prison over this. It's not going to happen to any of these people. It's not going to happen to Clapper. It's not going to happen to Brennan. It's not going to happen to Comey. It'll be questionable, even though McCabe's on the hot seat right now, as whether it happens to McCabe or any of these actors in the deep state. I'm sorry. I just tend to be pessimistic. I would love to see indictments. I would love to see this entire paradigm change. And by time the election rolls around, then all these people are outed, and it's out there for everybody to see who the real liars were and who the real co-conspirators were and the collusionists, if that's a word, you know, where those, you know, who those people are. But I tend to be pessimistic because I'm constantly seeing that there's two forms of justice. There is justice for us, meaning people like us go to jail and we go to prison over relatively minor offenses, and the people that really make the gigantic offenses that damage the security and the heart and soul of America, they are part of the protected ruling elite, and nothing's going to happen to them.
I am going to slightly disagree with you, although I disagree with most of what you said, and I think that some people will be indicted on some charges. What punishment they get may be way less than we want, but I don't think William Barr is going to let this go.
Well, you know what? I love you, and most of the time, I trust you and believe you, but I'm going to respectfully disagree, and don't throw your coffee at me.
We'll see what happens.
Hey, look, this is a marriage, okay? We can disagree. But I tend to be more pessimistic, okay? That's just what I'm saying. Mark it on your calendar that we had this discussion today. Are you ready for some coffee?
I am ready.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere, and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our response to active shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to responsetoactiveshooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, responsetoactiveshooter.com, and be safe out there.
Do you have your coffee? Are you settled in?
I'm good. Let's go.
Okay, because I have a question for you. My question is, listen carefully. In your ongoing dinner parties with far-right figures, some of who advance the conspiracy theory that white supremacy is a hoax, did you discuss so-called social media bias against conservatives? And do you believe there is a bias?
Well, I feel like Jesse Waters just asked me a question coming out of Georgetown University or something.
Can you not answer that?
Well, no, I don't think that we do show a bias. I mean, the good common sense conservatives don't show a bias. They tend to be very factually based on what they say.
This was the very question that AOC, Ocasio-Cortez, asked to Mark Zuckerberg during the congressional hearings. And when Mark Zuckerberg had exactly the same reaction as you did, which was, what? I don't think I remember everything you said in that question, because that question is as loaded as a .45 pistol. And, you know, it was like, what are you asking? She said, never mind, move on. And she asked another question. So here's my questions and my comments, of course. Who wrote that question for her? Because that girl's not smart enough to write that question.
Well, you know what? This just shows you how running and getting elected for Congress is so good for you. Okay, because how do you go from being a dumbass bartender just a few months ago to asking loaded questions? And if you pay attention to her on television, you never see her do anything but look down at her phone, which is her teleprompter. So everybody writes stuff for her. None of this stuff is hers, because every time she opens her mouth spontaneously or contemporaneously, she always gets such backlash for saying such stupid things.
Well, this question, I watched this as it happened, and I was just totally insulted, first of all, in the tone and the way that they spoke to Mark Zuckerberg. Now, I'm no Mark Zuckerberg
nope, nor
fan.
Nor am I.
But I do respect. And in Congress, in our halls of Congress, when you're interviewing people there, you need to be respectful. And nobody ever is anymore. And this question was not her question. She didn't even care what the answer was. It was that she wanted to know how smart she looked on TV. And in my opinion, it made her look even more dumb, because you know she couldn't write something like that. And it's a ludicrous and stupid question, because Mark Zuckerberg is not a right-wing guy, so he's not out there having dinner and socializing with right-wing guys. So this was just a setup question that was written, I would guess, by one of George Soros's minions. Now, I want just the entire hearing with Mark Zuckerberg there. So the basis of the hearing, as I understood it, and believe me, I did not follow this. I just happened to see it. But they wanted him to basically to police political lies in ads placed on Facebook.
No,
right?
Exactly. Okay. That's what this was all about. And that's not the business of Facebook playing police to politicians, because almost every word that comes out of most politicians' mouths is a lie, okay, or some type of spin.
Well, what they really wanted him to do, Ron, was they wanted him to police President Trump's ads, because President Trump has been spending a lot of money, spent about $5 million recently on Facebook ads. And they don't like what the ads are saying, so they want them to be policed. So what they did is they took a guy who, you know, you have to give kudos to Mark Zuckerberg. He created an idea that linked billions of people in the world. I mean, he absolutely created a huge idea, and he made it happen. What has Ocasio-Cortez done except for deny 25,000 people in her district jobs at Amazon? But I'm just saying, how do they want Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook to police ads? Because do you think that only President Trump lies in the ads? Or could it be that Democrats lie in the ads? And then is Mark Zuckerberg supposed to decide who's lying and who's not lying? Or should he do what he says, and that is let the people decide who's lying and who's not lying? So then they get even more ridiculous, and they say, well, could I put an ad out that focuses to a black community and tell them that the election is on a different day so that they don't show up? I mean, now that's ludicrous. That is a lie that, of course, they could catch and they could change. But you just see where they go with this. And I was just astounded, as I usually am, watching Congress be complete idiots, sit up there and talk a lot but really not say anything. And they couldn't get what they wanted from Zuckerberg, so they just put him down. And you know what? Not one of those people hold a candle, in my opinion, to what Zuckerberg has done in the name of, you know, for society and for, do I like all of it? No. But still, I mean, he managed to do a really big thing in the world here.
Well, you know, one of the things, of course, there's so many things that I don't like about Congress, no matter what side they're on many different levels, because all it ever is self-aggrandizing and self-serving political theater. Okay, they have their 15 minutes of fame on television. The only time you ever see them is when they're on national TV. And they're always giving, first of all, they're always condescending. They're always pedantic. They treat very few people with any respect whatsoever. All of the questions are loaded. But I have to go through 2 or 3 minutes of them making a statement about them.
Yes.
Okay? So I have to listen to these.
Or some lies that they say, like Schiff did.
Absolutely. So they're going to talk about themselves. They're going to get their moment in the sun. They're going to spin everything. They're going to ask a loaded question. And I mean, that's what it is. And it's almost every single person. And I'm sorry, I don't like it because I'm not that type of guy. Me, as a forensic investigator, I don't introduce myself. I don't talk about myself. I have a series of questions that are very important, and I think every congressperson gets 5 minutes to ask the questions. Believe me, I'd throw out 5 questions in 5 minutes. All right? Let's get it done. Let's become truth finders and fact finders. Let's not become narcissists where it's all about me. Let's really do a good job interviewing the witness. And so it bothers me when someone like Cortez, that I know has no two brain cells to rub together, gets down in her teleprompter telephone and acts condescendingly to Mark Zuckerberg, who could buy her and sell her a million times over.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that you saw this, so I want to tell you a couple others, because it's just extremely insulting that the people that we elect to office act this way. So Representative Joyce Beatty, and these are all Democrats from Ohio, she said, "It's almost like you think this is a joke when you've ruined the lives of so many people, discriminated against them. Do you know what percentage of African Americans are on Facebook in comparison to majority folks?" What? And again, Zuckerberg said he wasn't sure because Facebook doesn't ask people's race when they come on to Facebook. And by the way, these people, these same Democrats, have made such a big deal that we don't discriminate and that we don't ask race, that when you hire somebody, you can't even ask these questions. They also asked him, how many LGBT people do you have working for you? He says, I don't know. We don't ask people that question.
And as a matter of fact, you're not allowed.
Exactly.
And Facebook is based in California, and California employment law, labor law, specifically states that you can't ask people what their gender is. You can't ask them what their religion is, what their political ideology is. You can't ask them, you can't even ask them if they've ever been arrested or convicted for a felony.
No, you can't ask them. You can't ask them all the things that you would need to know as an employer. You can't ask them if they're coming into the job, with some sickness that is going to prevent them from doing their job. You
Correct.
Can't ask them all these
Correct.
Things.
But that just shows how disengaged and uninformed.
You're absolutely right.
The
they don't even know what
are.
They're asking.
And so people that follow it, some people just, sit in front of the television and watch these, watch these Senate hearings, and it's kind of mindless stuff. People like you and me, if we're going to sit down as busy as we are, we're going to sit down in front and we're going to watch a congressional hearing. Believe me, I'm like the guy that takes notes, and I'm going to listen to the quality and the content of the question and how that question is presented, so that it's unbiased and it solicits a forensic fact. Okay, and if people paid attention like that, they would see how self-serving, how narcissistic, and how stupid and uninformed and disengaged these congresspeople are.
Exactly. And this entire facade here was totally unnecessary, because they could have asked him any of these questions just in a document and he could have responded.
Sure.
But no, they had to make it some big circus because they get their 2 seconds of fame, which they like.
Well, and they're feeding their base.
Right.
Okay?
But to beat up a guy like Mark Zuckerberg for not wanting to police political speech, other than if it's so completely off the wall that it's, just so obvious, what they are doing, Ron, is they are trying to minimize our First Amendment rights. And that's not Mark Zuckerberg's job. They do have a company that does, monitor Facebook and your posts. And if you're way out of line, hopefully they'll catch it. And that's all that they're going to do.
Well, let me step in here as a guy that's been in social media jail. but it's absolutely amazing. And this is one of the reasons, full disclosure, with regards to why did they bring Mark Zuckerberg in there. This was a hearing that dealt with, essentially implicit and confirmation bias, which is something I've spoken about many times. And, it's not Zuckerberg or Facebook's job to police the world that's on Facebook. Just a couple of things that AOC forgets, and whoever the BD is, when she asked that question, is first of all, Facebook, if you just have a regular profile, as everybody knows, it's a free service. So if black people want to get on Facebook, if Hispanic people, if Asian people want to get on Facebook, any person of color, any gender, any sexual orientation wants to get on Facebook, they're welcome to get on Facebook. Nobody is going to prevent them. So that just, again, shows how dumb and uninformed that woman is. But I do want to say this, and I'm going to speak specifically for about a couple of companies. Number one is LinkedIn. I have a professional page on LinkedIn, and I use it as a business networking tool, and I will occasionally make comments and post articles, including articles that I do, articles that you've done, television news programs that I'm on, to get it out there and share that information. I never do anything on LinkedIn that's offensive, okay? I never do anything on LinkedIn, post anything that's not true. And I was recent. I had 7,000 followers, 8,000 followers on LinkedIn. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, my account became restricted. And I'm a premium member, so I pay to have that service. And I couldn't get a single response from anybody in LinkedIn. And if anybody's ever tried to contact LinkedIn, it has one of the poorest customer service business models that there is. You can literally not contact them in any way, shape, or form. And I had 21 days to contact them or lose my all of my 8,000 followers. And what do you think? The time burned out. And I lost all of my 8,000 followers and I had to start all over again. Those are the things that I think Congress has a right to ask someone like Zuckerberg or Google that runs, you know, LinkedIn.
But but this really had nothing to do with any of that. It only had to do with what their goal, which was to have him police President Trump's ads, if you want to just bring it all the way down to, you know, the naked truth here.
Well, he shouldn't, unless you are posting something that's outright inflammatory, okay, you know, discriminatory, anything like that, okay, then, you know, you're saying something that's racially insensitive. I mean, anything like that. You're violating a law. Then yeah, you should be restricted or you should be removed, you know, from that social media venue. But other than that, like you said, we do have our First Amendment rights, and if you are going to have a company where you are soliciting patrons for free and you are allowing them to post and talk and everything, knowing full well that a lot of people post political things, then guess what? You ought to let them do it.
Exactly. So this is just it's just unfortunate the way that these people are treated. And it's one after the other in Congress. They're just treated so poorly. I'm ashamed to watch them.
Right. Well, no, and I absolutely agree with you. And, you know, when they push it off on, you know, here's the excuse. It's the algorithms. Well, you know who creates the algorithms? Coders. Okay, so there's no AI. There's no artificial intelligence that creates the algorithms. Human beings who are coders and programmers create those algorithms, and when they are setting up those algorithms, they set up the parameters in which those algorithms operate and discriminate. So don't tell me that it's just a machine that's doing it and there's nothing you can do about it, because it's absolutely incorrect. Are you ready for our last cup of coffee?
I am.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, I got my last cup of coffee and I'm ready for round three, young lady.
Okay.
Have you been paying attention to the new sort of breaking news about the financier Jeffrey Epstein and the international sex trafficker who mysteriously died at the Manhattan Correctional Federal Facility in downtown Manhattan in New York City?
Well, I have been following it as much as I see of it, and it's kind of intermittent, but I just saw some new news that there were some new, very interesting and disturbing bones in Mr. Epstein's neck.
Yeah, well, I just recently did a program on One American News, and talking about that, they've got a copy of the autopsy report. I went over it. Dr. Michael Bodden, of course, what broke the news is Dr. Michael Bodden, who I've opposed in prior cases dealing with death investigations. He's the guy through the attorneys of the Epstein family that broke the news that they found a broken hyoid bone and two thyroid bones and some damaged cricoid cartilage, which are all, as you know, small bones in the neck, right?
Right.
In esophageal airway, surrounding the esophageal airway. And when you break these bones during a hanging, it's a rare event. And I did the research on this because I've dealt with a lot of jail hanging cases. And you know, Linda, that only 12% of all the suicide hangings result in a fracture of the hyoid bone. Okay.
And tell me if I'm right on this, but aren't most of the ones where those bones are fractured, aren't they the kind of hangings where somebody has more of a drop, so it shocks the neck more, rather than somebody that does kind of what he did, where he just leaned forward and strangled himself on the rope?
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you remembered that, because that's exactly right. According to the reports, what he did was he fashioned a ligature using a sheet, which is how they, in jail, how they normally do it, and allegedly placed that ligature around his neck and then just leaned forward from his bunk. And, of course, what happens is if the ligature is applied properly, it cuts off the flow of oxygenated blood to the brain and causes something referred to as hypoxia and then unconsciousness. Now, a person, if you do it right, you can achieve unconsciousness in about 15 seconds. And that's critical because once you're unconscious, the body's weight continues to place force against the throat, right, and permanently cuts off the flow of oxygenated blood, and you asphyxiate. But it's rare to break bones. Now, another scenario is if somebody manually strangles you, in other words, puts their hands around your throat, that's how those bones bilaterally, I mean, each side, that's how those bones are more classically broken. Now, he didn't have any fingerprints on his throat, but he did have contusions. He did have what we call ecchymosis, or bruises and contusions, but he didn't have fingerprints on his throat. In other words, a series of marks into his throat.
Mm-hmm.
But that's easily accomplished if you take a towel and you fold it up and you strangle somebody that way.
Yes. And it's also, don't forget that he was attacked just a few days before that.
Correct.
And he did have marks, finger marks on his throat on
that
day.
Absolutely.
So they could have done some damage that day that didn't kill him. But I've never thought that he committed suicide, and I still don't think he did.
Let me add, these things, because we always talk about in these forensic investigations what's referred to as the totality of circumstances. In this case, the totality of circumstances, there are just too many coincidences. And you know
right.
what cops like to say, we hate coincidences,
yeah.
right? So what would be the chances that not one but two of his correctional officers had both fallen asleep?
Right.
Okay, and he had not been checked for 3 hours. What is the coincidence that not one but two cameras, surveillance camera, one pointing directly at a cell door so you can see whoever goes in and out, and one pointing down the hallway so you can see who enters the hallway, both of those are out. Okay, what are the chances of that? What are the chances that a non-board certified person who is a doctor, he's not even a psychologist yet, he's going for his doctorate degree, assesses him and finds that he's no longer suicidal, and he's removed from suicide watch just about a week before he allegedly kills himself. I mean, I could go on
and then he
on
gets moved
on.
Into a cell, and all of a sudden his cellmate leaves.
With no partner, okay?
Right.
No cellmate.
Right.
Okay? And all of this happens to the number two highest profile federal prisoner in the United States, Guzman, the famous cartel king.
El Chapo.
El Chapo being number one. This is the number two guy, and he knows all sorts of stuff about all sorts of political figures.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton, yeah. Bill Clinton, all these people, Prince Albert, all these famous international people and politicians, and he's an international sex trafficker.
Yes.
Okay? And he was going to talk. They were talking about him talking. Oh, by the way, did you know that his compound in the Virgin Islands just burned down?
Oh, I did not know that.
That's brand new news.
Oh, my goodness.
I just brought it to
well,
you.
Well, and see, and there's somebody that's very powerful that has things to hide that, in my opinion, murdered him and now has burned down this place because they were talking about him having things in his safes. And there you go. So they want no evidence of anything. So somebody really has something to hide.
Absolutely. Well, listen, let me skip on. And, you know, we were sort of talking a little bit, a little bit about politics. And so let's talk about election fraud in Michigan. And so the city clerk, Sarikia Hawkins, who's 38 years old, of the city of Southfield, was recently arrested for 6 felony counts of election fraud. And they found that she had tampered with over 200 ballots. And the thing that was interesting is she recently received an award by the Michigan Democratic Party.
Well, I think that this situation with election fraud is happening just like this all over the country. And I think that any state, any city, any county, any local government, federal, state, whatever you want to talk about, that does not allow for guarantees for voting to be fair and honest, so voter ID required.
I think that's huge.
Yeah. I think that people really need to be cautious and concerned if their particular legislators are fighting against having that in their state or city, because that is a major red flag to me. And, you know, Judicial Watch does a wonderful job on this, but it's a huge job. This is a huge country. They can only do one thing at a time, or they actually have a lot of lawsuits going at a time, but they take a long time.
Yeah, you know, and you're right. And the thing that really bothers me about this is voting is such an amazing privilege for a United States citizen. And only United States citizens should be allowed to vote.
Absolutely.
Okay? And I don't care if it's local, state, you know, municipal, or federal. Only United States citizens should be allowed to vote. No one else allowed
yes.
to vote.
And we need to protect that, that
serve,
right of ours.
I mean, really,
we need
people
to protect
have
it.
Died by the hundreds of thousands United States soldiers to protect that right. The other thing is that the people that are entrusted with these ballots, we need to make sure that those people are thoroughly vetted through the election system, and also that there's oversight. Thank God in this town of Southfield, Michigan, that there was some, you know, oversight of the electoral process, or this woman would have never been caught. And by the way, this was the 16th election that she had overseen.
Wow.
So God knows what happened to the 15 prior.
Absolutely.
Prior elections.
Yep.
Okay, so that was a huge what do you call it? Breach of duty and breach of trust.
Yes. I want to talk about some good news.
Sure, I've got a couple too. Go ahead.
You know what? There is a 14-year-old young lady from California, actually. She's in eighth grade. Her name is Kara Fan. And she just won a huge Young Scientist Challenge from 3M. And it's a national competition which is held every year in St. Paul, Minnesota. She invented, at 14 years old, a nanoparticle liquid bandage to replace antibiotics.
You know what? I can't even wrap my arms around that.
I know.
Okay. And 14 years old. That's incredible.
She won $25,000.
Good for her.
What is amazing about this young lady is that she felt that people take too many antibiotics, and she wanted to create this bandage, which would really localize, you know, fixing a wound without the antibiotics, but give the same benefits. And I mean, 14 years old, it's just amazing. And then I kind of started looking at some of the other kids who maybe didn't win first place, but they really did something amazing. There were 10 finalists in this competition. And another one, Carolyn Crouchley, who got second place, she created a sustainable train that is safer and more efficient than Elon Musk's Hyperloop. And the reason that she created this and had this idea is because she says that 4 million children a year develop asthma, and that she believes it's due to the pollution from cars and trucks, and that there are 11,000 new cases of asthma every day. So she wanted to help solve that problem, and so she created this train that would not create pollution.
But what does it run on, Linda?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they didn't give a huge amount of information in the articles that I read. I was just simply reading, you know, what they did. It uses some renewable energy sources instead of fossil fuels is what I do know. And there's one more student that I was very impressed with, and his name was Faraz Tamboli, and he created a device that translates sign language into voice and voice into sign language. So he got his inspiration from his dad, who told him a story that when he was a kid, there was a friend of his who always wanted to play with him, but the kid was what they call aphonic. He couldn't talk, and his dad couldn't understand his sign language, so the dad got scared and ran away, and he always regretted it later in his years, I guess. So his son, who was in this competition, thought, why can't I create something where these two kind of people can communicate, one that uses sign language and one that speaks, and have it go both ways, right?
That is so complicated.
It is so fascinating. So he did think of a way to recognize the hand and its gestures on the computer and figure out the movements to make it make words back to somebody that can hear, and on the reverse, make your words make those hand signals to somebody that can't. And I just...
And how old is this kid, 16?
These are all kids. I don't know his age. I know that they're all in that eighth grade kind of, you know, age group. So I don't know what the rest of the kids did, because I only got as far in understanding what the first three did because I found them so fascinating. But I'm just... I just think it's such great news that we still have that kind of inspiration and that kind of entrepreneurship in our young people.
Yeah, and you know what? There's been just so much lousy, depressing news lately, and just to hear some good news is just fantastic. And I mean, even you and I talking about great news is uplifting. You know, I've got a good news story, and I think everybody knows Gary Sinise, and he played Lieutenant Dan on, you know, Forrest Gump. And then, but he also was a guard in the Green Mile. And I mean, he's done some amazing, he has an amazing body of acting work. Well, he's got the Gary Sinise Foundation. And of course, Gary Sinise is all about our veterans, including the veterans who have been killed in the line of duty. And so people donate to the Gary Sinise Foundation, and he does a lot of really amazing things with those donations. And so he just recently took 1,000 children of the families of fallen United States military personnel and took them all free of charge on the jet planes, everything, their stay, the whole ball of wax, to Disneyland in Orlando, Florida. So I just thought, you know, how amazing is that? Where you take, I get where you could take 25 or 50 kids, I get that. But, you know, what it costs and the logistics to take 1,000 kids and take and fly them from all over the country and fly them to Disneyland for free, and just let them play and be kids. I just thought that was amazing.
That is amazing. And, you know, he does such great work. And, you know, when we lived in Temecula, he would come out there and he would do some fundraisers at South Coast Winery. He's just an amazing, gifted man. Do I have a second to tell you
Yeah, I think we just got, I think we got a couple
of
minutes.
I'm going to tell you, you know, I love traveling, love, love, love traveling. And so I want to tell you for next year, 2020, what the hot places to go are turning out to be.
And
this is from experts at Contiki, Trafalgar, Uniworld, and Friendly Planet. Okay, so they kind of weigh in and they tell you what the trends are as to where people are traveling to. So I'll tell you them.
Okay.
The United Kingdom is one. Vietnam is another. And I actually would like to go there. That's a foodie hotspot there in Vietnam.
Yeah, I'd like to go to Thailand. And,
I'd like to go to Thailand.
Is it called Phuket? Is that where
Phuket?
It is?
Phuket? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And go there. But I'd like to go to Vietnam. Yeah. And I know a couple of buddies of mine that went to Vietnam, and they had a great time there.
Well, it's the number six top booked destination. Egypt. Egypt is...
A couple of our friends went to Egypt, and
yes,
they spoke very, very highly of it.
Absolutely loved it. Not for me, I don't think, but I... You know,
we go for the history.
It's number four on the list of where people want to go next year. Cuba is also very strong. I think that President Trump has just put some travel restrictions there, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, we've gone in and out with travel restrictions. The travel restrictions actually returned during the Obama administration, and they've been in place since.
Yep. India. And you know, Ron, I never wanted to go to India until I just saw pictures of India, and I had no idea how absolutely gorgeous the landscape is there. I know it's the most populous country, I think, but it looked gorgeous. Canada and the Galapagos. The Galapagos, I think, were closed for a while. They're back open for business. And then Africa is very, very big. It's a lot of young travelers going to Africa.
Wow. Well,
we have a friend there right now.
And I just had one of my consultants just return back from India and going to the Himalayas for his, I think, third year of going up to the Himalayas. So those are all really great places to go. And I've got a place I'm going to go right now, and that's Tibet.
Okay.
All right. You ready?
You got it.
Here we go.